This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly. Sorry, I really sprung that on you.
I forgot we were recording. And I'm Matthew.
And I spilled milk. The show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
You're that thing? Uh-huh. Okay. I am the show. You can't fire me, says Molly. And today we're talking about French dips.
Oh, I got roast beef between my teeth.
Yeah, me too.
Ew. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're talking about French dips. It shows off to a raging start.
Yeah, Molly's like, let's start the episode when we're half done eating this sandwich.
Well, I know that our listeners expect poor eating etiquette from us when it comes to the microphone and chewing. And
they
so I wanted
it.
To deliver. So this episode was suggested by listener Lisa.
Thank you, listener Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Prior to, like, 2 minutes ago, I'd never had a French dip.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to borrow my spouse's memories for my memory lane.
Do you do that using, like, a mind spelunking device?
That's right. No. Last night, as we were getting into bed, I was like, okay, babe, well, I'm going to get up. I got to do some research on French dip sandwiches. And Ash was like, those were, like, a regular thing in my family's dinner rotation.
Sure.
I love them. And then Ash said that once their family even found, like, packaged French dips at Costco.
Hmm.
And I asked some questions on how this would work.
Yeah.
Like, was it like a sandwich that was already made and you warm it up? And then was there like a little cup of jus next to it? And Ash goes, no, it's au jus sauce.
Yep.
And then we had to stop talking or we were going to kill each other.
Well, I think we're going to be able to, like, pick up right where that left off.
What's on your memory lane?
So I definitely had this a couple times when I was a kid because it was like a thing you would see at a certain type of restaurant that was like a sandwich that didn't have mayo on it.
Mm.
And so I was and was like warm. So I was intrigued and I liked it. I didn't have it often.
This is so interesting. So something that I've often noted because of my proximity to my spouse is that I'm not drawn to warm sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
Ash, so attracted to a warm sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my spouse loves a hot sandwich. And I kind of, like, don't like the smell of a hot sandwich. I would never think to order a hot sandwich. I find it a strange idea. But maybe my spouse had more, like, indoctrination into hot sandwiches as a kid than I did. Because I really
did. Do you ever have a nightmare where you're at a Quiznos? Yeah, I thought so.
Are those all hot?
I think so.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I just find a hot sandwich to be a weird idea.
Is it?
But I feel like it's, like, something that shows up on, like, airplanes.
It is something that shows up on airplanes.
Yeah, and I picture the smell of it. Ugh. But anyway.
I mean, is that the best version of a hot sandwich that you're going to get? Yes, it is.
I mean, that said, I love a hot dog. I love a hamburger. I do think those are hot sandwiches. So, I don't know. I'm full of contradictions. So
I used to be in a band called Bad Sandwiches.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Briefly.
Okay. Well, so hold on. How did French dips re-enter your world after childhood?
So a few years ago, Watzel and Totsdy, the other members of my family, went to visit some friends of theirs in Colorado. I stayed home. They had French dips for dinner one night at their friend's house.
Okay.
And December thought this was great and asked when they got home, December asked, like, can I make French dips? And I was like, yeah, I assume so. I've never done it. And so I Googled and immediately pulled up a Rachel Ray recipe, which is the French dip recipe that I've been making ever since. And I don't make them often, but a couple times a year.
Okay.
And yeah, that's my memory lane.
Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
I have felt mildly skeeved by the thought of dipping a sandwich in something. Although I do like grilled cheese and tomato soup, but as we discussed on a long ago episode, I'm not like a natural dipper there either.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm more of a natural dipper, even though there are so many dips that I don't like.
I know. But you are, despite the fact that you're condiment phobic, you're better about like mixing flavors and mixing things on your plate than I am. I don't
That's
like
true.
That.
True. Yeah, I think
you have
show,
a little
Lori,
bit of ground. You have a little bit of beef between your front teeth, yeah. And it's like flapping around every time you talk. And
I can't Did I get
stand
it?
Stand looking at yeah. it. Yes.
Yeah, I think wife of the show Lori is more in your camp about like mixing things on the plate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I guess that
you established a camp for this, right?
I did.
Like a summer camp.
But does Watzel like camping? Because at my camp,
more than I do, I think.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about what a French dip is.
Yes,
I did
please.
The research for this.
I'm so glad you did.
And I truly felt that I was going in with a blank slate,
mm-hmm.
and that blank slate was me.
Okay, what did you find?
So a French dip is also known as a beef dip.
Can I take a guess? About this, because
oh,
I don't know anything
please.
About it.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is this was invented in the U.S. in either the 20s or the 50s. You don't have to say right now whether I'm right.
Okay, it was invented in the U.S.
Okay.
When it was invented is kind of
debatable.
Up for
sure.
Debate.
Yeah, of course.
But it's probably between 1908 and 1918.
Okay.
So a little earlier than you thought. So it's also known as a beef dip, according to Wikipedia and some people. It's basically a hot sandwich that consists of thin sliced roast beef on a baguette or like a French style roll.
Yeah.
Would you just say for a minute what you're looking for when you go to the grocery store to get the bread for this?
Yeah. So I want a roll that looks like it was cut from a baguette, but not like a good baguette. Like something probably made in the supermarket bakery. So
okay.
It's going to have like a very soft, fluffy crumb and a crispy but not too crispy crust.
Got it. Okay. Sometimes Swiss cheese is included in this sandwich and onions.
That sounds good.
But the basics is just thin sliced roast beef on this French roll. And it's served with a small bowl of beef broth, which is in theory made during the cooking of the beef. And in this case,
that's not what happened here.
In this case, if it's made during the cooking of the beef, like the culinary term for it would be jus, J-U-S,
uh-huh.
which would be like the beef juices. I've been trying to tamp down my snobbiness and not get into the corruption of the French language that has happened with the
No, but let's get into it. Yeah,
this is
a bowl of au jus.
That's right. That is what it's called in the U.S., a bowl of au jus. So au jus in French means with broth or mm-hmm. with like juices.
Yeah. So it's like a sandwich au jus.
Yes. And it's not a noun. It's a preposition and a noun. Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Whereas in English, au jus or au jus has come to be like a noun, just a one word noun, basically.
Yeah. Or it can be au jus sauce.
That's right. My spouse insists that it is au jus sauce.
Yep. I think I agree. That sounds fine to me.
I hate this so much. I hate it. So anyway, sometimes you will see on a menu that like people will call it like sandwich with jus. But most of the time in the U.S., which is where this sandwich originated, which I'll talk about in a minute, mm-hmm. it may be described on a menu as like French dip, like a sandwich with au jus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate that.
I like it.
I hate it.
I will go like you know toe to toe with the members of the Académie Française, and we're gonna like fight, I guess.
But all right. I'm gonna stop here.
Great.
All right. So French dips are an American invention, and the name likely refers to the style of bread.
So it wasn't invented in France where it was originally called a deep français.
That's right. A deep français. Okay. When it was originally developed, it was not served with the jus, according to Wikipedia.
Okay. Wait a minute.
And we're going to get into this. Okay.
Let's get into this.
So first, we're going to talk a little bit about the two LA restaurants that have claimed the birth of the French dip sandwich.
Okay.
One is called Cole's Pacific Electric Buffet.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. Wait. Okay. So what does an electric buffet just mean that like it was like served on like electrified?
Do you think went further into it than just the name? But I love that you think I did.
I'm imagining them like trying to plug food into a socket.
And I see it kind of blinking on like neon. Mm-hmm. Okay, the other LA restaurant is called Philippe the Original. I mean, what the hell named these restaurants?
Do either of these still exist?
I didn't find out.
Okay, great.
Okay, Philippe's website describes the dish as, quote, a specialty of the house, and the words home of the original French dip sandwich are present in the restaurant's logo.
Okay, so if they currently have a website, that's close enough to still exist.
Okay.
Like, I meant, did they go out of business in the Depression?
No, they didn't. They lived long enough for the internet to happen, okay. And maybe they're still living. Okay, at Philippe's, the roll is dipped in the hot beef juices before the sandwich is assembled and is served wet. While at Cole's, it is served with a side of beef juices. It can also be requested double dipped, which Wikipedia describes as both halves of the sandwich are dipped before serving. What does mean?
Does that mean like at the one that dips it, they usually dip only like the bottom of the sandwich? Or the top? Maybe they dip the top of the sandwich so that the bottom like sort of stays intact. Nothing about this sandwich stays intact.
No, I don't understand. Let's just ignore this part.
Okay.
So both restaurants feature their own brand of spicy mustard that's traditionally used by patrons to complement the sandwich. And the controversy over who originated it remains unsolved. Cole's claims to have developed the sandwich in 1908, which was the year it opened. Philippe's also opened in 1908, but Philippe's claims that its owner invented it in 1918.
Interesting. That's a pretty wide range.
I know. 10 years, yeah. Same city, two restaurants.
Do you think that the real story is just lost to history, or like, you know, could someone go into like, you know, the LA Public Library, like the deep stacks and figure out what happened?
Well,
I'm not sure what they would be finding.
According to Wikipedia, the mystery of the sandwich's invention might not be solved due to a lack of information and observable evidence.
Okay, wait, I have another idea. End quote. They talk to the ghosts of the founders?
I wonder if they've tried that.
Yeah, maybe get a medium involved.
Yeah.
Maybe a Ouija board.
So
is it Ouija board or Ouija board? When I was a kid, we always said Ouija board.
Yeah, it's pronounced, or it's written Ouija board, but everybody always says Ouija board.
Okay, so like let's start a new segment.
Let's get a Ouija board and use it on the show.
Exactly. So that when we get into one of these things, like who invented the BLT, we can ask the Ouija board.
Okay. Let's do it. Let's expense it. Okay. So I'm happy to report, Matthew, that the French dip has one of those stupid accidental invention stories that I know you love.
My favorite thing.
So
yes,
much.
I
like,
do.
Like Ruth Wakefield dropping a bar of chocolate into her cookie dip.
I dropped a sandwich into the grease trap.
And, that's right.
Right.
Okay. And I fished it out and ate it. No. Okay. According to Wikipedia, the story of the sandwich's invention by Philippe has several variants. Some sources say that it was first created by a cook or server who, while preparing a sandwich for a police officer or fireman, accidentally dropped it into a pan of meat drippings. The patron liked it, and the dish surged in popularity shortly after its invention.
Okay,
can we
pause before we go on with this one? Like, because I'm imagining, I don't really have a theory on the fireman. Well, no, I do. Okay, well,
yeah, why do you think it's mentioned that it's a policeman or fireman?
So I think what happened is they like looked up while making the sandwich and saw either a cop and were like, or a fireman were like, fire. And dropped the sandwich because they thought they were going to get arrested and or there was a fire.
But then they served the sandwich anyway, which seems
a dropped sand? Like I just dropped this sandwich. Do you want it anyway? Like, no.
I mean, this accidental origin story seems very implausible to me. I mean, who serves a sandwich that you accidentally dropped?
I mean, probably a lot of people, but not if they saw you drop. You would, like, in this case, you have to explain what happened.
But imagine if you ordered a grilled cheese sandwich and it came out and it was like dripping with beef juices. And you were like, what happened? And they were like, oh, I dropped it in the meat drippings.
But you want it anyway, right?
I thought you'd like it anyway. I mean, it seems like that's what they did here. It's just a beef sandwich that they did it to.
I'm imagining, like, yeah, now, like a one-star Yelp review. Like, I'm a fireman and I need to tell you what happened at this restaurant. Okay. And I also need you to all know that I'm a fireman.
Oh, here are some other accounts.
Okay.
Possibly a customer who didn't want the meat drippings to go to waste requested his sandwich be dipped in them.
You're right.
That's right. Okay. All right. Still others say that a chef dipped a sandwich into a pan of meat drippings after a customer complained that the bread was stale.
Hmm.
Now, this one's my favorite. Wait.
But let's talk about that one real quick, because I feel like this is like a very passive-aggressive chef.
It's true. Like, I'll show you. Yeah. I'll make this bread moist again.
Right. Like, you know, chew on this.
Okay, get ready. Cole's accounts state that the sandwich was invented by a sympathetic chef named Jack Garlinghouse.
Good name.
For a customer who was complaining of sore gums.
Wow. Okay. I like this one.
Oh, I love that. Some accounts tell Philippe's version of events, but assign the location to Cole's.
So probably first he tried like pureeing the sandwich, and then the customer was like, no, do you have any other ideas? Like, well, I have the sandwich that I dropped.
I love that his name is Jack Garlinghouse.
It sounds like Garlic House.
I know, isn't it
right?
Great?
It's a good name.
Darling House.
It's like an old-timey kind of name. Like, are people still named Garlinghouse? I hope so.
I hope so, too.
It's kind of hard to imagine.
Hey, if any of you are named Garlinghouse.
We have a listener named Garlinghouse. That would make me so happy.
I wonder if listener Garlinghouse knows if this story is true and if they're maybe related to Jack.
Wow, you really jumped a bunch of steps ahead there, but yes. Okay. I would like to hear that from listener Garlinghouse, who definitely exists.
You know, I'm going to remember this story the next time I have a dental cleaning with my, like, gum pocket measurement, you know, where they poke your gums.
So much.
I had it, like, last Tuesday, and my mouth was just kind of sore for the rest of the day. I needed Jack Garlinghouse to come make me a French dip.
Yeah, did, like, after the success of the French dip, did Garlinghouse, like, do, like, a whole series of foods? Like, did it become known as, like, the sore gums diner? Because, like, I mean, it's like a serious issue that some people really need things that, that you know, are easy to chew and or don't, like, irritate the mouth. And, like, that could be your thing at your diner. It could be.
It could be.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary tastes with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
So what did you think of your first, are we done with history?
Yeah, okay, I think it was good.
So that takes us up to like 1918, like what happened since then?
I don't know.
Okay, so how did you feel about your first ever French dip?
Okay, so I liked the effect of the beef broth dip more than I would have thought.
Okay.
I think without the beef broth, the sandwich would have been really like one note.
Oh, for sure.
I feel that maybe it could be improved with a little bit of cheese or onions.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
All in all, I mean, it feels like something that I would order if I were like...
if you had sore gums.
If I were like an old-timey detective.
Like, oh, I like
eating
that.
In like a diner.
I absolutely.
And like spying on someone over my newspaper.
And this, like, I mean, I think you would be a lot more noticeable. Like, if you're trying to be like stealthy, like, and you're like dipping and like slurping that at this sandwich, I think the person you're tailing is going to look over and be like, what's going on over there?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm imagining more like this is like the thing you need to do to like really mull over the evidence.
Oh, yeah. I feel like, but this, there's something about this that is so deeply uncool.
Absolutely.
This is a deeply uncool.
It is so
food.
Like such a dorky sandwich.
It's so unsexy.
Yeah, it's just like a pile of deli meat and then you make a mess.
That's right. And
or it could be deeply sexy.
Well, here's a question for you. So this beef broth that you made is delicious, and I'm going to ask you more about it in a minute. But do you not drink it after this?
You know, we should.
This seems really wasteful.
It's pretty salty by itself, but it's good.
Oh, but that's really good. Yeah. I love that.
No, you're like the customer who didn't want them to waste the beef juices.
Mm-hmm. Mm, love that. Yeah. All right. So what's your feeling about the French dip?
Oh, I really enjoy it. Like I said, I don't make it very often, but it always feels like a treat when we have them for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's partly because it's like different from like stuff we usually have. And also like the dipping just makes it feel special.
And what do you serve it with?
It'll be like just with a simple salad.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like it needs a vegetable component on the side.
Yeah, maybe. Or like a roasted broccoli would be good.
Ooh, that would be really nice. That would be great. And so tell me about this Rachel Ray situation.
Okay, so the thing that appealed to me about this was that it's very simple, and I got to buy a kind of Campbell's soup that I'd never bought before and have never bought for any other reason.
Okay, tell me
so
about it.
It calls for 2 cans of Campbell's condensed beef consomme, and I was like, are they even going to have that at the store? I've never heard of that. Of course they do. And you don't.
Delicious.
Yeah, you don't reconstitute it. You use it condensed. And so here's how you make the au jus sauce. You saute some shallots in butter.
Ooh.
You add a tablespoon of flour. Okay. First you deglaze with a little sherry, or like, because I don't usually have sherry around, I used Shaoxing rice wine.
Okay.
And then add a tablespoon of flour and cook it off for just a minute, make a quick roux, and then whisk in the beef broth and just bring it to a boil, and you're ready to go.
But it doesn't have a thickness to it.
No, I think just like a tiny bit of body of unctuousness.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't just feel like I was drinking a sauce.
No. And then like when you're assembling the sandwich, you dip the meat. Well, first of all, you sprinkle the meat with McCormick Montreal steak seasoning.
What?
Yeah, I'll bring this over to the table. Okay. And then you dip it quickly in the sauce before it goes in the bun.
Oh, I bet that makes a world of difference, and I didn't even notice.
I said bun, but it's a roll.
And so did you like stack the beef, dip the whole stack and put it on the bun, or
no,
did you do like slice by slice dipping?
In between. I did it in like, you know, 4 mini stacks and then kind of shake it around a little bit so it gets in between the layers just a little, but you don't want the beef to like cook through.
Sure. Yeah, no, it was rare roast beef.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Oh, yeah. And I just got like, you know, Kroger brand, like London broil roast beef from the deli.
I noticed that you hollowed out the roll a little bit.
Yeah, I think I hollowed out a little more than I would have liked in retrospect. But when I have a roll with a really thick, soft crumb, I don't usually want all of that in my sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was delicious.
Good.
Can we link to the recipe?
Of course. I think it's on Food Network.
I thoroughly enjoyed that salty broth, and I drank it right up.
Yeah.
And I love knowing that it's shallots. I was thinking, like, it really gives a certain kind of extra, like, sophistication.
Yeah, and I really do like the idea of putting, like, some sautéed onions on the sandwich.
Yeah.
I think cheese, I could kind of go either way, although Swiss cheese sounds really good.
Okay.
I will try that. So if you're like a meat sandwich kind of person and you've never made a French dip, give it a try.
Yeah. I mean, here we are in July.
Are you going to make one for Ash now?
I think June would probably love it.
I think you should make this.
Okay. I'll make this.
Yeah.
Fine. Great. Okay. All right. Hey, do we have any spilled mail?
We do. This spilled mail is from listener Gwen, and I think this was on the French bread pizza episode. Listener Gwen says, you mentioned packaging sometimes includes a foil-coated tray, which leads me to both an answer and a question. First, the answer, if you encounter a tray with instructions to cook in the provided tray, either microwave or oven, chances are it's been designed to improve the evenness of the cooking. I work with a lot of great people who test items like this every day. So let's pause here because, of course, I asked Gwen for more details about the people at work who test these items.
Oh.
And Gwen replied, yes, the company I work for also designs and manufactures them. I can't guarantee the one you saw was made by GPI. However, it is likely we call them microwave susceptors.
What?
So I could not believe that listener Gwen did not include the phrase microwave susceptors in the original email.
Hold on, I'm trying to unpack this phrase.
I think they're like susceptible to absorbing microwaves and radiating it back out as heat.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not like Mr. Etymology or anything.
Okay.
And the question is, which leads me to my question, what is your favorite food packaging and why? I think my answer to this is going to be so obvious, but nothing else even comes close. Do you want to guess what my answer is going to be? I mean, one thing I was realizing as I was thinking about this is that it seems like there is so much food packaging that isn't very good.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm thinking in particular of Goldfish crackers and like
too.
Pepperidge Farm cookies. I mean, what is up? I love the paper bag, the foil inside, but the foil inside never opens cleanly. You will always tear it. And also, you can't recycle the paper bag because it's like got foil glued to the inside of it.
Right. Yeah. The other one, we talked about on last week's episode, these like spicy potato chips that I've been eating. Like, potato chip bags suck.
They totally
suck. Like,
suck.
As I was opening it, like, it tore down the middle.
So I had to
put it in a Ziploc bag.
Hold on. Okay. I'm going to guess that your favorite food packaging is the like peel and stick top of an Oreo.
Oh, that's
container.
A really good one. That wasn't going to be it, but that is up there. That works so well.
It does work really well.
Such
Do you remember
a good
the
design.
First time? Remember when we were doing an Oreo episode and I just tore open the
I
end
do.
Of the bag because
yeah.
I'd never seen peel and stick?
And I was surprised because usually I'm the one who does something horribly wrong on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like how I cut the watermelon weirdly.
Oh, yeah. You're never going to live that down.
No, but and plus it shows you if someone's tampered with your Oreos, which is a problem that I have a lot.
Okay, but wait, what's your favorite food packaging?
It's the onigiri from a konbini.
Oh, yes.
That, it is a multi-layered plastic rice ball package where as you tear it open, the seaweed, which was sandwiched between layers of plastic so it stays crispy, is released and pressed against the rice at the last minute. And then you take the first bite and it's just perfect.
I think I really like, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't, Gwen, I'm going to be honest. I feel like I have not paid enough attention to food packaging other than when it doesn't work.
I mean, the Oreo one is a really good answer.
The Oreo one is really good. And I also, I'm thinking of, for instance, like the La Panzanella crackers that are made here mm-hmm. in Seattle. Those have a peel and stick. And I often keep them around for eating with like cheddar cheese or something as a snack. And I am always delighted when I open the cabinet and take them out and the sticky part is like still stuck down.
Yes.
The crackers are fresh and the sticky part, like it's also the Oreo peel and stick, the flap is almost a little thin. So you can kind of almost like get it a little wrinkled and then the peel and stick doesn't stick well or airtight. But when it does, so gratifying.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, like I'm back onto like bad packaging. Like when you open a box of cereal or crackers, like first you're supposed to pull the strip and it never like pulls off correctly.
If there's
and
even
then,
a strip.
Right. And then there's like the little tab. And like, does that ever really work?
Wait, what little tab?
Like that, you open a cereal box and like the tab is supposed to go into the little slot and you have to kind of like push the little slot open. And like, this is not a good system.
Well, also, why does it have this like plastic bag inside? Isn't there some better way?
It seems like there's got to be some better
because
way.
Because the plastic bag, like either you have to just be really, tidy about letting the air out and rolling it down. Although sometimes that makes the box bulge, which then makes the flap not go in. But if you happen to have multiple people in your household who eat cereal, at least 66% of them are going to be incapable of properly rolling over the cereal bag
to
keep it from getting stale.
I'm a member of the 66%.
You did a terrible job of rolling over the chip bag at my house the
other
day. I don't understand. But anyway, why isn't this better?
I don't know. All right. Well, I mean, I think listener Gwen and the other folks at GPI need to get on this.
Yes. Or maybe they already are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, listener Gwen, for a great question.
Maybe the problem is much more difficult than we imagine.
Could be. Molly, do you have a now but wow?
I sure do. So I received this book.
I saw this book at your house the other day, but I didn't look at it because I was busy playing with your baby.
So full disclosure, I received this as a review copy from the publisher.
Okay.
It's called More Than Cake, 100 Baking Recipes Built for Pleasure and Community by Natasha Pickowitz,
okay,
who is a New York-based pastry chef. this book is, admittedly, there are, I think, a lot of things in it that I am not going to go to the trouble to
make. I just saw espresso chocolate hazelnut cake go by, and that is my kind of cake.
I mean, like, there's just a lot of stuff, like yuzu and olive oil curd. I'm probably not going to make that.
I would eat that if someone else made it.
But on the other hand, there are some things that make me inspire me to like reach a little further than I usually would, like this passion fruit, like roulade type thing.
Yes.
This would not be like difficult to make.
No, it's not going to look as pretty as that when you make it, but it's going to be as tasty.
But it is gorgeous. Also, June has spent some real time thumbing through this book.
I love it so much when a kid picks, like, you know, flags recipes in a cookbook. That's my favorite thing.
Here we go. June has flagged toasted vanilla bean pound cake with a little slip of paper that says, make soon.
Oh, and see, what it's the best.
What I really like about this recipe is, so toasted vanilla pound cake doesn't sound particularly special, right?
No, I mean, it sounds good, but not unusual.
This one has some corn flour in it, in addition to the like regular all-purpose flour.
What's going on in that picture?
So this is a slice of it that has been toasted in butter.
Yes.
Yeah. I really like the idea of this, and I'm excited to try it. It also has buttermilk and lemon juice in the pound cake. It's just, I find myself really, even though I think a lot of the recipes are
cheddar oat cakes,
more complex than I usually go for when I'm baking, I feel really inspired, for one thing, by the tone of this book. I really like her whole vibe.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful book. And I also love that Natasha Pickowitz did a lot of bake sales for Planned Parenthood and has raised like hundreds of thousands of dollars for Planned Parenthood. Also, one other recipe I'm interested in is the cheddar oat cakes.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Looks super good,
looks so good.
Right? So I think this book looks fantastic. Do I need another like baking book? No. Am I happy to have this? Absolutely.
No. Do I now have an idea for a gift for wife of the show, Lori? Ooh, yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Okay.
All right.
Lori, don't listen to this episode.
Don't. We'll mark this one not safe for Watzel.
Oh, that's what NSFW stands for. I'd been wondering. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Hey, you should talk with other listeners on our Reddit, which is
everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
That's right.
And you can like talk about like sandwiches you've dropped.
Yeah. Tell us about, I don't know, your accidental food inventions.
Yeah. Tell it. Yeah, absolutely. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. We dropped the show into a dumpster, but you can still listen.
I'm me.
And I'm also me.
Well, I have a lot of questions. I mean, about like how you made this. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to ask them yet. Mm-hmm. This bun is such a poor approximation for French bread, and it's perfect.
Yeah.
If you had gotten like a quote unquote real French baguette, it would be an abomination in this sandwich. Okay. Well, wow. Okay. Well, here we are.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary taste with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.